All right, here we are live, Common Sense Ohio. Check us out, commonsenseohio.com. Lots to cover today. On guard, Newsom versus Trump. It's not just chess. It is real, I promise. Busting bunkers at Fordo. It is not the Lord of the Rings, Norm. It is Iran and much, much more. But first, let's hear a word from our sponsor, Harper Plus Accounting. Check them out. My accountant could be yours.
Are you an entrepreneur who doesn't know when to pick up the phone or get out the keyboard to contact your CPA?
A lot of people are like that. And one of those things that you have to figure out when is the right time to do that is when you feel like you don't know what's going on. How much money am I making? How do I pay my taxes? I'm running my business out of my checkbook and I have no clue what's going on. I don't know if my employees are making me money. I don't know if my products are making money. I don't know which way I'm going. I'm upside down. I can't concentrate or can't think about anything other than where the heck am I? Instead of thinking, how do I grow and continue on my business? That's when you should call.
So if you're an entrepreneur and you're looking to have a tax question in regards to that, drop it in the comments and we'll try to get back to you.
All right. There's our people. The studio looks familiar too. For those who didn't notice, they cut that right here at 5:11. Anyway, this day in history, June 18, those who don't study history, Norm, are doomed to repeat it, as they say.
Aye.
So we had Adams in 1798 occupying the White House, his rival Jefferson, of course, and there was lots of stuff slinging back and forth. I mean, to the point where Abigail Adams was so fed up with it, she wanted Big John to put a stop to it in some fashion. This resulted, and plus we had some problems with the French at that time. You know,
yes.
There was we were trying to negotiate with them, and they wanted us to pay them off first. And we thought they in 1789. This is like where you look at a timeline of history where it's sort of interesting because everybody knows the French Revolution, but that was 1789-ish, and you had that sort of changed the landscape of how we dealt with the French. So anyway,
yeah.
We were worried for whatever reason that we were going to go to war with the French. So on the brink of war with the French, Adams passes the Alien and Sedition Acts, which, you know, sort of barely passed. He got it through, but it changed the way we look at things. I mean, he decided that he was going to be the one who could deport or change citizenship. So he made you wait 14 years for naturalization instead of five, created a basically power structure where he could deport people on his own. And then the sedition part of it was the most controversial because he tried to outlaw those who were slinging falsehoods against the federal government.
Wow.
Sort of the first attack on free speech. Mercifully, it was never really enforced too much. There were some people charged, I guess. But
yeah.
Does all that sound familiar?
Yeah. And, you know, like people, we're familiar with the Boston Tea Party, right, during the Revolution. And so, you know, like a lot of people say, well, taxation without representation, that's not fair. And so the first thing, I mean, the founding fathers really kind of, once they got in power, they kind of went back on some of the founding issues, like George Washington almost immediately invaded Western Pennsylvania over the whiskey rebellion.
Yep.
You know, which was a tax thing. They were trading whiskey to each other.
And think about it. It was like the frontier too. You know,
yeah.
This is like the old. You know, it's like we're in the frontier, and they're sending the regulars out to.
Right. I mean, these are good Pennsylvania boys that probably fought for Washington.
They've been brewing or distilling whiskey their entire lives. Their granddads were doing it too, and they just wanted their whiskey.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to pay tax.
And they didn't. Yeah. It was their means of currency, and they said bullshit. The federal specie, whatever the bank issues, like that's the currency, and you can't use whiskey as currency. It seems like a bizarre to me.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Like Adams, like you just mentioned, you know, a guy who defended the British, you know, at the Boston Massacre, he defended the British soldiers as an attorney. He was their attorney, you know, in the court case, and they were found innocent, you know.
Yep.
I mean, here he's trying to choke down people's speech.
So it's an interesting, we have been grappling with these issues
Yes.
Since the beginning of our country.
Yes.
And I guess what my takeaway from this is we're sort of dealing with some of this stuff today. I mean, yes. Look, we're going to get into Gavin versus Newsom very soon. Or
right.
Not Gavin versus.
Well, he is.
Newsom versus Trump.
He is kind of fighting himself.
Right. He is sort of fighting himself. But, you know, this is the kind of stuff. This is the conflict that
yes.
We always have this conflict. And I've said this about law. The more freedom you want, the more safety you forego. And that's just how it is.
That's how it is, right.
And the more, if you're going to create these freedoms, you're going to limit power of the government. You have to.
Right.
And, you know, there's a seesaw impact of this. Now, at different times in our history, we've been willing to give it up. So if you look back, you know, there was a re-emergence of some of this stuff during World War One,
yeah.
And then certainly during World War Two.
Right.
These were times of desperate need, apparently, you know, drastic times, call for drastic measures.
Lincoln
in the Civil War, yeah. Similar type of stuff, trying to suspend habeas corpus.
And telling the newspapers what they can print.
And it's almost always met in our country with resistance.
Yes.
We are different.
Yeah.
So we are different. We are not, you know, people give me this nonsense all the time, like, well, you know, the Brits have gun control, or they have the, and I was like, yeah, we're not British. We left.
Right.
You know, we left. Right. I still, you know, you wonder how we are steeped in that tradition. You know, like we are, it's ingrained in us that the government can't tell us what to do. I don't give a crap what's going on in Iran. I don't give a crap what's
right.
going on anywhere else.
Right.
I don't want to be told what to do. And there was this, like during COVID, there was this enormous pushback and it failed for Adams too. You know, he lost the election to his rival Jefferson. And that was it. You know, you try to do crap like that, you're going to fail. And this is maybe a lesson for Trump and maybe a lesson for Newsom, maybe a lesson for all of them, because it is all the same stuff from a different side.
Yes.
Like the more power you want to grab, the more pushback you're going to get from our people. I don't care what side of the political aisle you're on. We don't like it.
No, none.
I don't like it.
No.
And, I don't like it.
And, you know, and it's almost like regardless of what the content of the speech is, when I see speech being suppressed, and I said this a couple shows, Steve wasn't here, and Brett and I were talking about these campus riots. I'm very concerned that the students who want to be pro-Palestinian and anti-Jewish and all this horrible crap that they want to spew, they have an absolute right, in my opinion, to spew that crap.
So listen to this, Norm.
Short of violent speech.
The House passed the Sedition Act permitting the deportation, fine, or imprisonment of anyone deemed a threat or publishing, quote, false, scandalous, or malicious writing against the government of the United States.
Wow. Come
Does
on.
It sound it like, and you can say Trump, but it was Biden oh, 5 years ago.
Oh, come on.
You know, doing this
right.
crap
yes.
during the COVID times.
Absolutely.
So it didn't work then, and it's not going to work now.
I mean, he sent agents of the FBI to go tell social media giants what they could and could not.
That's right.
I mean, it was the government itself coercing these people, holding that, what is it, Section 20 or whatever, yeah. you know, that Internet Protection Act over the head of Meta, and trying to get them to coerce them into regulating our speech on that platform. So, and Steve, I just got to remind you, because people forget it. There was an actual Senate hearing, okay, official U.S. Senate hearing,
yes.
chaired by Rand Paul, and they would not show it anywhere on the internet. Like people would just post the raw footage, like C-SPAN would publish. They wanted to repost that to like Twitter or whatever. And they took it down, an official Senate hearing. Unbelievable.
And look, mercifully, the Sedition Act expired on March 3rd, 1801. And this stuff, I think we have weathered the storm on it. I think the backlash of it was quick enough and enough that people were like, hold on a second. I should be able to say whatever I want on
right.
social media.
Right.
And, you know, there was – what else is interesting – I didn't watch it because De Niro's pissed me off these days, but De Niro made a movie recently. It was on Netflix. I don't remember where it was, but I just saw a clip of it. And he's like, he was talking to one of his aides about the news media and news sources. And he's like, well, maybe we need to control them for our purposes for once, you know? Yeah. And it's like, he's saying the quiet part out loud. Like,
that's right.
like he's falling into the trap that he purports to fight. Like
right.
you can't do it. The government, the president, nobody with authority should be able to suppress your free speech. And it failed for Adams. Jefferson takes over, and it failed for Biden.
Yeah.
So anyway,
thank God.
Onward and upward. That is our fact of the day. But I, you know, again, it's relevant toward our stories, actually.
Yeah, history did repeat, and it will repeat in the future. There will always be somebody trying to strangle your right to talk. So this temporary restraining order that Newsom won for, I don't know, about an hour and a half before the appeals court said, no, we're not going to sustain the lower court's TRO on Trump's right to deploy the National Guard or federalize the National Guard, the California National Guard, which he federalized because the mayor and the governor of the mayor of LA and the governor of California basically gave up the streets to the rioters. They didn't bring in the LAPD. The chief of the LAPD said, we are overwhelmed. We don't have the people. We cannot contain this violence on our own. And hearing that, Trump said, well, we'll help you.
Well, and you know, this is important to break this down because like so many of these hotbed issues of our day, the courts aren't deciding the merits of it. They're deciding whether it should be stopped while they decide the merits
yes.
of it.
Yes.
So should we enjoin, should we issue an injunction or should we order everything to sort of stop and back off or keep the status quo while the courts figure out the legal standards?
Yeah.
So the issue, and an important component of that analysis is the likelihood of success on the merits, as I've said here. And the Ninth District or the Ninth Circuit here is looking at this. And
or circus.
Yes, Ninth Circuit. they and Trump's people were basically arguing, look, you can't review this. There's no authority to review this.
Yeah.
Newsom is saying the opposite. But I thought it'd be interesting at least to look up the act that they're trying to review. So that is, you could find that in 10 U.S.C. 12406 for you lawyers out there. That's basically fancy talk for that's the United States Code.
Yeah.
U.S.C. stands for United States Code. So there's a whole book, volumes and volumes, way too many volumes, frankly, of laws that have been passed in the United States. And here's what it says. National Guard and Federal Service call. Whenever the United States or any of the Commonwealth's or possessions is invaded or is in danger of invasion by a foreign nation, there is a rebellion or danger of rebellion against the authority of the government of the United States, or the president is unable with the regular forces to execute the laws of the United States, the president may call. So if any of those three things occur, the president may call into federal service members of the units of the National Guard of any state in such numbers as he considers necessary to repel the invasion, suppress the rebellion, or execute those laws. Orders for these purposes shall be issued through the governors of the states or, in the case of the District of Columbia, through the commanding general of the National Guard of the District of Columbia. So there's certainly wiggle room both ways, right? So I think this shakes out that Trump's allowed to do this.
For sure. So let me, like Steve just said, history repeats. So let's review prominent, very famous rollout federalization of National Guard by President Eisenhower. So we had George Wallace blocking the schoolhouse door, as you people might remember, in Alabama. And what did President Eisenhower do? He federalized the National Guard, and the students were escorted into the building by the National Guard. Mm-hmm. There was no violence, but there was a possibility of violence in that case.
And who was that big fat governor down? What was his name?
George Wallace.
Oh, Wallace. Yeah. You already said, yeah. Wallace. And yeah. He's out there. He certainly didn't authorize any of that, and he didn't want any of it. And he said, we don't need you down here, boys.
And Ike, who was, you know, a five-star general during World War II, later president, said, hey, bullshit. I'm nationalizing the guard in your state, and they will escort these black children into that school. Mm. And he did.
And he did, famously. Everybody's seen the footage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it happened. And, but, you know. And
not just in Forrest Gump. Wasn't it?
No, it was real deal. And so, you know, for them to say in L.A., well, the violence was mostly peaceful. Whatever. I mean, they're using crazy, like, you know, they're using
this
crazy.
This is Orwellian doublespeak.
Yeah, it's gaslighting off the hook. And it's like, there doesn't have to be violence. There just has to be an assessment by the president that they're like, this is a powder keg situation. And certainly L.A., every bit was that. They shut down the interstate highway that's the main artery through downtown. And, like, you can't do that.
Yeah. So
you can't do that.
And you know, I always like to look at these things from a neutral, or maybe not even neutral, from both sides.
Yeah, sure.
And I always ask the same question. What's come up with a scenario where there's different facts that the people opposing this now would not oppose it. And you gave us one.
Yeah.
You know,
they'd be all in favor of that.
They'd be all in favor of that. It's the same lever of power. And I'm not saying that you should permit that lever of power, but you should analyze it from that perspective.
It should be rare.
So if Trump wants to do this, he should say to himself, am I cool with pushing this lever of power now, knowing that the next time somebody else is in charge, as inevitably happens, as it did with Adams and Jefferson, as it inevitably happens when the next guy's got his hands on that lever, am I going to be cool with its use against me? And this is where politicians, these divided groups, never they seem never to go that far. And I hate to bash Democrats, but they're the most culpable of this.
Sure. And situational ethics.
That's right. So they are more than willing to use the power, and it's almost like, well, yeah, but we're right. But this is for righteousness.
Yeah.
And that's the most dangerous. That's the most dangerous use of power.
When you are
usurping power for righteousness because you're so sure that you're right.
Yeah.
And that you should have the power to do these things. That is where authoritarian lies.
That's right.
Yeah. Authoritarianism lies.
So there is some weird stuff that has spun out of this. Anyway, just to finalize that, in the news today, we'll find out maybe what this three-person appeals court is going to decide. And then I'm sure, you know, whatever side loses at the appeals court stage is going to appeal to the Supreme Court. That's inevitable.
The issue at hand on this appellate ladder is whether the National Guard can stay there while they're figuring out whether they're allowed to stay there.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and in the meantime, Mayor Karen Bass has called off her curfew as of today. She had a 1-week curfew because of the rioting, which she said was mostly peaceful. I don't know about you guys, but I saw cinder blocks and chunks of sidewalk and stuff being thrown at cops and cars on
if
fire.
If my car is on fire, I would hardly. But, you know, I get questions like this all the time. What is my right to protect my property? And, you know, when the government does, this is bad. Bad stuff happens when the government permits this stuff.
That's right.
So, Norm, you know, this is like back in the Floyd riots.
Oh, my God.
There was cases downtown Columbus where there are rioters on people's cars, on their hoods, jumping up and down.
Yeah.
And what do you do
as
the property owner?
Yeah.
It puts you in a very difficult spot because, in theory, it's personal property. You're not if you can't make a colorable claim that your life is in danger, you're in threat of some sort of serious bodily harm or even bodily harm, you can't go use force against that you can't use serious force to protect your property.
Yeah. And so,
or deadly force to protect your property.
And so when the police are withheld either by the mayor's directive or they're simply overwhelmed, but like up in the Kyle Rittenhouse, this is what happens when the official organs of government do not establish order. Then privateers like Rittenhouse was protecting a car lot, to your exact point.
Foolishly, really.
Yeah, I mean, he was a minor with a rifle out there, and like, I don't know what his parents were.
He was 18.
Was he?
I think he was 18.
I thought he was 17.
Or maybe he was. Either way, but he's too young to be out there with an AR-15 and a mob.
Absolutely.
You know, without training.
Right. And guarding cars. Guarding not people but cars.
But cars, right? So this puts people in really bad. Now the other, I guess you could argue, well, just go home, don't be there. But and then what? Watch my house burn?
Right.
You know, what do you do?
Right.
Or if you're going to go home now, what do you do when the mob's at your door?
Yeah.
You know, then what?
I mean, the police in the Rittenhouse case were just watching what. I mean, they established like a line of
perimeter,
way back, and they were like, just go ahead and burn whatever's in the middle down. Fine, we'll watch.
You can't take control of those things after you allow it to get that big.
And it got so bad that after the shooting, Rittenhouse went up to this picket line that the police had established and said, hey, we exchanged gunfire, and they said, just go home.
Just go home.
So he went home, and then they arrested him.
Right. It's so obvious. You can't let this stuff get out of hand.
No.
Now, this is not to say people aren't permitted lawfully to protest. You can.
That's right.
And you should. You should. You heard it here. You should.
Yeah.
But you should also follow the rules to protest. Now, and then people would say, well, that's not fair. There shouldn't be any rules to protest. We don't get our message across. Well, you know what? Well, that's part of living in an ordered society.
Wow.
You can't shut down High Street.
Yeah,
In rush hour.
Yeah,
in any city, you know, High Street USA, you can't shut that down, or Main Street USA,
yeah,
during rush hour.
Yeah.
You can't do it. I argued with this when this was going on here. People are like, well, it's here. They're free. No, you don't have a right to free speech to shut down people's businesses and destroy their property. That, there is no right to do that.
Right.
And this is where everybody who knows me and everybody's listened to this and everybody's talked to me privately knows I hate the government. Right. They know I hate it. I don't like it.
Yeah.
Because I say that sort of facetiously, but I don't like it because as soon as you give the government power, it wants more.
Yeah.
But this is an instance where you need the government to stop it. And if it stops it in time, it doesn't get big enough to be a problem.
And we had a shooting death in LA, you know, that they have these armed. So the lefties, okay, have their own like private security police who carry guns, right? And in these riots, and they thought they saw a guy with a rifle stand up and they thought he was going to start shooting. So the lefty police, not the real police, but just these private people carrying guns, shot at this guy and they missed and killed an innocent man who was just there on the scene watching the riot. And it goes to show that when the government withdraws and decides to just let this out of control party happen, things like Rittenhouse or things like this innocent third party getting killed, that's a result.
That is a direct result of this.
It's a direct result.
And shame on them for not taking responsibility. Like they put Rittenhouse on trial, and look, you can't put you can't try the government for its ineptitude.
Yeah. Although you can do
You can do it at the ballot box.
You could do it at the ballot box.
But that's what this is. This is a complete breakdown of government.
An abdication
of their own responsibility to do. Look, they should have. That should be the power that they have.
Honestly.
Not this other nonsense to cram down bathrooms or whatever.
Right.
The power should be to protect the public from this kind of crap. And nothing else.
Yeah.
I don't want to say nothing else.
But that's kind of
it
like.
It should be limited.
That's kind
that's
of
101.
Like. Yeah, that's right.
It's 101. Let me quietly enjoy my business. My home,
that's
and
right.
be able to go to and from, and let people protest all they want. You can do it. There's ways you can do it. I'm all for it. Have at it.
Yes.
Don't stop traffic on Main Street in rush hour and jump on people's cars.
Yeah. Keep the peace.
All right. I've said my piece.
Yeah. So I was this is an interesting cultural, like this young lady. I mean, I think there's a lot of misinformation and misunderstanding of what's going on with ICE in general. And that's kind of what kicked off the riots. So the Dodgers had a young lady sing the national anthem. She is of Mexican descent. And she said, I would like to sing the U.S. national anthem before the baseball game in Spanish. And they said, absolutely not. You know, you have to use English. You have to sing it with the actual, you know, words that go to the national anthem. That is the national anthem. Oh, say, can you see? And, you know, all that. And so she defied them, and she sang it in Spanish. And so the media went to her and said, young lady rock star, whatever you are, young lady, why did you do that? And she said, well, my parents are of Mexican descent. They're citizens of the United States, and I'm worried that they're going to get deported. And I'm just like,
they're not getting deported.
What are people talking about? This is not like there seems to be a major, major misunderstanding. And I don't know if it's more in the suburbs or just more in the ethnic communities, but where are people getting the idea that the U.S. government and ICE are going around looking for people on the basis of race to deport them? They're not. That's not what they're doing. I don't care if you're Swedish. If you're here illegally, they're after that Swedish person. It doesn't matter what.
Well, and not even that yet.
Good God.
They're here. They're looking for criminals first.
First.
And look, it's such a. It's so insane. It shows you how much influence back to this. The, again, we'll take it back in history. It shows you how much influence the media has, even when they print falsehoods.
Yeah.
So the media is like, I heard these people talking yesterday how all of this is Trump trying to become a king or become a dictator or become this or become that. It's like, it's such an overstatement of reality
right.
that people start to believe it.
And, that's right.
And I'm not asking to regulate the speech, though.
No.
I'm asking for more speech. I'm asking for honest speech. Right. I'm asking for honest commentary on what's going on out there. Yeah. Because if this woman actually believes that her citizen parents are going to be deported, she is delusional.
She was crying during the interview, and she said, I just can't imagine they're going to come after my parents. And I'm like, what is she talking about?
And I would want to know why singing the anthem in Spanish is going to prevent that.
Or waving the Mexican flag at a protest rally. Like, what's that about?
I've heard these guys saying, you stole the land from us. It's like, well, guess what? You stole it from somebody else. So,
the Aztecs.
Yeah, it's like, are you Spanish or are you Mayan, right? Yeah. You know, like, what are you? And I don't care, frankly, what you are.
No.
The point is like, we live in this world as it is today.
Yeah.
As it is today.
Come on, get with it. I mean, you know, I have partial Irish descent, so do the British owe me reparations? I mean, come on. I mean, I guess we should talk a little bit about the Iranian-Israeli full-bore war.
I mean, how about that?
I mean, it's unbelievable. We had a guest in here who wrote a book with fascinating interview.
We should get him back on.
Yeah, about I always forget, October 7th, right, was when that Hamas raid happened, into Israel, with paragliders and all this crazy stuff. And they threw babies in ovens. They raped and murdered young people at a concert. It was just.
And did you hear some of the calls coming out? Like, I heard a recorded call that came out where this young soldier's calling to his mom and bragging about how he killed all these Jews. And I mean, just nasty stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like, you know, it was like Genghis Khan stuff. I mean, it was crazy. So, so we're so far past that now. Israel says they are going to completely evict all the Palestinians from the Gaza Strip. So, like, you know, so now it's just gotten to the point where, like, the line is a bright line in the sand, and Iran famously had 60 days, 2 months, trying to negotiate a peace accord with Israel, and U.S., you know, tried to broker the talks, and Iran wouldn't sign the deal. And basically it was give up your nuclear program in exchange for, you know, American gas or whatever we need to give them, sell to them, food, whatever, and they wouldn't take the deal. And so on the 61st day, they start lobbying stuff, and Israel starts lobbying stuff back. And Israel controls the skies over Tehran. They're bombing at will.
It's really interesting how this all plays out, too, because, and I admit, I didn't see necessarily this coming. You know, remember, in the last 2 months, Trump was, I forget when he was over there, talking to the Iranians and talking to the Qatar and all these people. And he was even starting to get criticism from both sides about being weak about how he's doing this and sort of playing up on how he's doing this. But maybe, just maybe, Trump had a bigger strategy with Israel to say, look, I'm going to go in there and take the temperature of this. I'm going to say, look, here's the deal. Take it or leave it, whatever you want.
Yeah.
Apparently, the Iranians perceived some weakness there and decided to say no. And then Trump let Netanyahu do the dirty work. And I think, if you want to call it dirty work, but if you...
although he says, right, his public statements are, hey, we have nothing to do with this.
I mean, on one level, we don't.
Yeah, I mean, he's
but
trying.
It's not like we didn't know it was happening.
Well, he knows the Iranians have cells in the United States. I mean,
it's all this plausible deniability.
Yeah,
that's all the thing. But, you know, it shows a little bit of a dimensional thought out of Trump to do this, you know. And he, a couple of weeks ago, or before this, maybe about 3 days before all this, I was listening to something, or I heard a Trump interview, and somebody asked him something about Israel, and he goes, I don't know what Israel's going to do. And then it finally clicked for me. I was like, I see what he's doing here.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's right. I thought to myself, I'll bet you there's going to be a problem with Israel and Iran. And sure enough, there was.
It's that strategic uncertainty that he likes to inject where, you know, it's Henry Kissinger's madman theory of an executive. That when the other leaders don't know what your reaction might be or what your plan might be, they're afraid to act in many cases.
Yep.
And it de-escalates.
And that's what's going on now. Like, I think Putin came in and talked to Iran and said, look, we can't help you. Sorry. I think China might be sending some stuff over, but I think they're sort of backing off, too. They know that this is a problem that can't be fixed by anybody outside.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think at the end of the day, well, what's your thought? I meant to ask you this. Like, you hear, like, the late night shows, the news media, all the mainstream folks are saying now this is going to be like this big, huge regional conflict with all others involved. I don't think it's going there at all. I think this is going to be very limited. I think it'll be over in a matter of a week.
Yeah. Did you see where Syria, of all countries, you know, new leadership in Syria is offering their country for air bases? Like they're offering U.S. I mean, you know,
right?
The world is changing pretty quickly.
The world is changing, and it's funny how quickly it could have happened, or quickly it did happen, and to recognize how quickly it could have happened before.
Yeah,
somebody just needed to take a stance here and say, "Look, no mas."
Yeah,
no mas. And I heard people criticizing Netanyahu for, you know, going way back. Iran wants to kill us. And they've got nukes. If they got nukes, they'll kill us. And this is going back 20 or 30 years.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, finally, enough's enough. And, you know, what would, I guess, to those people, I would say, what would the U.S. do if we had an emergent power near us? Maybe not even near us. They're 1,500 miles away. But emergent power near enough to us where we were susceptible to a nuclear strike. And they were threatening to wipe us off the planet because they hated us ideologically. It's like, what would we do? What would you expect any country to do?
Well, we kind of know what JFK decided to do, right? Because the answer to that question is Cuba. And, you know, when they were setting up nuclear missiles in Cuba, you know, he put the embargo in place. We had Navy ships surrounding Cuba and turning back Russian boats. And, you know, then he did the Bay of Pigs, which was a flop, and, you know, fired the head of the CIA because they muffed the job.
Yeah, but it's still not quite the same because,
I mean, it's kind of the Monroe Doctrine thing brought into the modern era.
Except in this situation, Iran was on the brink. If you believe that,
that's
Iran's
right.
on the brink of nuclear, not energy, nuclear war capability.
They said in about 2 months.
And
this year, like, it was going to happen.
It was going to happen, and Trump was begging him not to do it. And
it was the old IAEA, the international, you know, UN-sanctioned group that inspects or makes estimates about nuclear power, the same ones that basically said the ones that basically said George Bush was wrong about Iraq, those same people were saying Trump is right, Netanyahu's right about Iran. They are this close to being able to, you know, send a weapon.
So here's the question now. What is the United States involvement in this and what's going to happen? You know, there's people begging us to send out our bunker busters and take out Fordo.
Right.
Which apparently is the under the mountain where they've got their nuclear facility, whatever that is.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't think it should happen. I don't want the United States bombing Iran. Here's the thing about Iran. Our country bears some responsibility, a pretty good chunk of responsibility for screwing up that country. I mean, it declassified records. Now clearly show that we installed the Shah of Iran into office over the top of an elected kind of a commie guy, Mokhzadeh, I think was his name, was the president of Iran and following World War II. And we didn't like that he was leaning left towards the Soviet Union, that he was kind of a commie. And so we installed the Shah, and he was a weak leader. And then eventually the mullahs, you know, staged a revolution when he went and sought medical help out of the country. They took over Iran. And it was, you can argue that it was us doing regime change, really, that screwed up that country and created the animosity, the reason they hate us.
It's the more you meddle, and we never meddle enough. That's the problem. So it's like we meddle a little bit and then sort of back off.
We half-ass it.
Yeah, that's right. For political reasons.
And we've done it in Vietnam. We've done it in, you know, El Salvador. Like, you can look at a lot of countries where the CIA had these regime change operations And almost without fail, it's a disaster.
Yep.
I mean,
now on the Democrat, for the Democrats' part, there's only one that is in favor of this, and it turns out it's Fetterman, who has turned out to be a pretty interesting dude.
Yeah.
You know, he at least I'm sure that if I sat down and talked to him on ideological stuff, we would disagree on some things. But at least he's intellectually honest.
Well, and he has a streak of common sense.
He's intellectually honest.
But there's like an everyday regular guy streak in him that just responds kind of normally, you know, like a knee-jerk kind of normal reaction. Like, no, I don't automatically hate my country. I don't automatically assume that people are racist if they believe, you know, in a healthy American, you know, open forum.
Yep.
And, you know, I'm not automatically against coal and pro-EV. You know, like, I want to hear the issues.
Yeah. If he's not a Democrat, I would be like him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it would be more like that. And on some stuff, I agree with him. You know, it's like a lot of times it is a little more complicated. And, you know, kudos for him for standing up, because he's clearly walking against the grain. And not many Democrats will do that. Republicans do that all the time.
Yeah. Kind of like Joe Manchin did.
Yeah, Manchin.
Before he left.
Kristen Sinema was sort of pushing against the grain a little bit.
But. Yeah. Yeah. And that's rare. It's become kind of rare. There used to be all these blue dog Democrats in the Senate, like Sam Nunn and Joe Lieberman. And they were like, they were common sense people.
Yep.
And we may disagree with them on things like abortion rights or whatever, but when it came to just being patriotic and loving your country, there's no question where they stood.
Right. We agreed on the problems, but not necessarily the solutions.
Yeah.
And fair enough.
Fair enough. I want to talk a little bit, I think, about the so Steve mentioned, I just got to throw this stat in. So a year ago, last month in May, when Biden was president, 60,000 illegal immigrants, claiming, you know, that they wanted their due process, were released by ICE into the country, like 60,000 in 1 month in May of last year. The statistic from ICE for May of 2025, zero.
Zero.
They did not release anybody.
It's such a telling fact, isn't it? It's like, we didn't have to do this. And this is where, this is where conspiracy theory, this is like the grain of a conspiracy theory starts. Because you have to ask, why were we doing it?
That's right.
What's the ideology behind it?
Right.
Why were we doing it?
Right.
And, you know, Trump sort of asked that of Biden. He goes, look, Biden, Joe's a smart guy. Yeah. He doesn't believe in this stuff.
Yeah.
So who was controlling this? Like, who was in charge? Like, whose decision was it to open up the borders and unfettered let everybody in?
Yeah, the pre-dementia Joe Biden would not have done this.
And you go back and you see all the quotes going back to Clinton, Obama, all these Democrats. No, everybody realized Hillary even.
Yeah.
You can't just open the borders and let people in.
Right.
You know, and why now? Like, what is it? Like, what is it that what shift in ideology changed that they now think that this is somehow bad to shut down our borders and not permit? I'm not saying not permit immigration, but not permit just an open border policy where everybody can come in. I mean, look at Europe. What's going on? They're losing their identity of their countries.
And
maybe that will happen in time, but we don't have to let it.
No. And, you know, like, nobody is arguing that there shouldn't be a work program or, you know, green card kind of thing.
Well, that's it. You can, like, if they say, well, we need the workers. Well, good. What's meter people in?
Yes.
And look, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
You want to come work in our country. That's what we're built on.
Yes.
But you can't do it without paying taxes, and you can't do it without.
Right.
If I have to pay taxes, you got to pay taxes.
Absolutely.
And you can't just get free benefits and open up the country and vote. Which you want to start planting conspiracy theories.
The staggering thing to me is we have this 9/11 commission report, because these guys that flew these planes, many of them had overstayed their visas. So, I mean, you can argue 9/11 is an extension of an immigration policy failure. I mean, you can make that argument. And clearly, the 9/11 commission, one of the primo recommendations is control the frickin' border. You know, like, so that terrorists can't just come across the Rio Grande, right? Or land at an airport and overstay their visas. Like, you've got to track people that are not citizens and deport them when they overstay. So to that end, an incident, a very interesting incident, analogous to that case up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where the judge hid the illegal who was in there on some kind of domestic abuse charge. And she heard that ICE was out in the hallway ready to take this guy into custody as an illegal. And she let him into her chambers and out the back door. Well, in Franklin County, Ohio, there was a Brazilian 31-year-old Leonardo Fausto, and he and his family live in, I think, Westerville. So, you know, a surrounding community of Columbus, Ohio, bedroom community. And he was driving without any license, and he was doing 70 in a 45. The judge dismissed the driving without license charge and convicted him on the 70 and a 45. And he was getting set to pay his fine. And a guy in a baseball hat walks up to him in the hallway before he gets to the wherever you pay and says, come with me. You're being arrested. They took him out in a van. And away he goes up to Cleveland for an asylum hearing, I guess. And now he's being jailed in Butler County, which contracts with ICE to house people in Ohio. When ICE arrests them, they have the facility to hold them. So apparently he claimed asylum. So he was in the country. So he's not an illegal alien when he entered because he claimed asylum. He had his hearing up in Cleveland. Asylum was denied. He has the right to appeal it. Apparently these appeals can take up to 7 years. And during the pendency of his appeal, he's allowed to be here. But he missed a hearing that he was required to go to during the pendency, according to ICE. He did not go to the hearing, and that was the infraction that caused his arrest. That's what's being said. The truth or falsity of that will come out, but that's the story. And it's interesting to me that in order, so they know he doesn't have a gun. When you arrest somebody in a courthouse, generally, right? They've been disarmed, they've been through screening, and it's probably the safest place for ICE to arrest people. And this is happening across the country.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, you can argue about whether that's here, there's so many dimensions to this.
Yeah,
because
go, man.
It didn't have to be this way. Because it was sort of a nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Come on in, ask for asylum. You'll never have to bother with us again.
Right.
Wasn't that what was going on?
That's what was going on.
Don't worry about your hearing. If you miss it, meh.
And his claim, Steve, his claim was a little bit like the Maryland dad. He said, there's a gang back there in Brazil that's after me and my family.
And fair enough, and, right? But make your argument.
That's not one of the criteria to grant asylum.
Yeah, make your argument, go to a court, and if we don't want to grant asylum there, we don't have to, and we get to change when we can let people in and not let people in based on what we need. And it's what being a country is all about. But, you know, none of this would have happened if it weren't permitted at the outset. It's sort of like it's back to the analogy of the riots. You know, if you stop it before it starts and say, look, you can protest, but do it over here during these times, but you can't shut down our civilization. Like if you would have said, look, you want asylum? Great. We'll listen to you.
Yeah.
Come on in.
And they did. Denied, he had his day in
and
court.
You get denied. And if you want to appeal, that's fine too, but you got to show up
yeah.
and then go home.
Yeah.
If it's denied.
If it's denied.
Like if the procedure would be enforced at the outset, we wouldn't be in a situation where we had to arrest people at courthouses. Now, the question is, should we arrest people at courthouses like this? I don't know. Why shouldn't we?
Why not?
I mean,
they would arrest me or you?
They would. Like for whatever it's worth, I represent people charged with crimes for a living. That's what I do. It's what I've always done.
Yeah.
And I've had plenty of clients arrested outside courthouses or outside courtrooms for crimes that they didn't even know they were allegedly committed or were accused of. Sure. Happens all the time.
All the time.
Happens all the time. You go to pay a fine, there's a warrant for you, bye-bye. And I get it because I see lawyers representing these people in like the underlying thing, and they want to protect their client from being arrested. But this is an ethical line that we should at least kick around as attorneys. You know, I can't commit obstruction. I can't aid and abet my client in evading arrest. I can't do that.
Yeah.
There's an ethical problem. It's probably a criminal problem too.
And neither could that judge in Milwaukee.
That's right. Same thing.
The FBI arrested her and she's being charged with obstruction.
So as a lawyer protecting my client, we navigate these waters all the time. And I've just learned there's certain things I can control, certain things I can't, certain things I can stop, certain things I can't. I tell my client what the situation is and they're going to have to deal with it. I've got clients right now that have chosen not to come to court because they are not citizens and they're here illegally. And they're like, well, I'm not coming. I'm like, all I can do is tell you to be there.
Yeah.
That's all I can do.
Right.
Will I get arrested? Probably.
Yeah.
Probably.
And here's another reason. You're stacking up the reasons by not showing.
So you're going to get arrested and I can't stop. Well, it does tug at my heartstrings because you get to know your clients.
Yeah.
But you know, this is what's caused by, if you can rewind the clock to the point in time where we let all these people in without process.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. So they were let in without process. Now they're going to get deported with process, I guess. So look, it sucks. I mean, on the individual level, it sucks.
Sure.
I guess that's my message.
Right.
That's my rant.
Well, and you know, the immediate reaction in the local media, and I don't mind this discussion at all. And it'll sound like I'm Judge Roy being Mr. Harsh here. I do love everybody, and I've said that many times. And I love this guy as a human being and all that. But people talk immediately, well, what now that he's been arrested and he's down there in Butler County waiting to be either deported or further machinations on his appeal, people are like, well, now what about his wife and his babies? And I just, you know, this is the thing. Well, what about Ma Barker's, you know, sons and daughters? What about John Dillinger's sons and daughters? What about, you know, like if you're going to be a criminal, is it then the fault of society that you're no longer, you know, like this Maryland dad, no longer supporting your family? Like, okay, let's go down to a church or the Red Cross, or let's go see some charitable organization and get some formula for the babies and, you know, do something, you know, in the meantime for the mother. But like, you don't fail to enforce the law because it's going to have a harsh impact on the perpetrator's family.
Almost, but it's a deeper problem than that. And I guess as I'm listening to you talk about this, it almost pisses me off even more.
Yes.
Because we being our government, created this problem.
Yes.
And it's not fair to the people who have to now suffer getting arrested. I know that sounds sort of ass backwards, but that's what's going on.
Right.
If we didn't open up the borders and let people in and contrary to law, then individuals wouldn't be getting arrested at court paying speeding tickets.
Right.
That's the problem. And now you could say the blame is on ICE now for enforcing it, but you could all, I think that's only part of it. The other part of it is they're here because of bad government action.
That's right.
And now, like, we're responsible for it.
That's right.
We are. I mean, the country. We're responsible for these people suffering these arrests and deportations.
In a way,
because we created it.
Yeah, in a way, we've jerked them around. We've also set up all this human trafficking. Because when you allow the cartels to control the Mexican-American border, right, they're bringing in young girls who are then exploited, you know, as prostitutes.
Yep.
And so you can make a cogent argument that we, America, have prostituted young Mexican girls or Venezuelan girls or El Salvadoran girls.
He's permitted it. And
I mean, you know, plus bringing in fentanyl and all this other shit.
And look at this. Here's what you're not hearing in the sort of the legacy mainstream folks. Or you're hearing it differently. They're saying, I wonder why the fentanyl crossing the border
went down
to almost nothing.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder.
Because we turned away 60,000 people per month.
It's like, huh, what could have changed?
Gee whiz.
Like, cause, effect. I wonder what that was. I mean, look, maybe it needs a little bit more study, but at least come up with a very obvious hypothesis.
I thought, Steve, I would throw this out because you and I have had some spirited discussion about the tariffs versus stock market versus federal. You know, the Fed and their interest rates, which I guess they're announcing today that they're still not going to lower interest rates, you know, the prime at the Fed. So I just think it's interesting, like, to take stock, no pun intended. So tariffs in April and May have totaled $40 billion in addition, you know, in tariff income to the United States. So if you multiply that by six, because that's 2 months worth of data, if that were to continue, let's say for a year, that's $230 billion new dollars into the federal budget based on the tariffs. And that's mainly China and Mexican aluminum and steel, because Trump kind of backed off a little bit on automotive stuff it's, you know, like 10% after some back and forth with other countries like Canada, the UK, Germany, et cetera. So we still have some tariffs. He's still, you know, like Steve says, he's bombastic or whatever, you know. And I would say it's strategic uncertainty, like, you know, start high, negotiate down. That's kind of the Trump thing. But at any rate, the stock market, it's also like we remember the Trump, like when it dove down in March and April after the tariffs were announced, and now it rebounded. And so if you look at when Trump took office to now, it's basically the same. Like it's 1% up from when he took office.
Yeah, but that's only that is true.
So this is where we're at.
But the trajectory when he took off. Look, what's the other side of that? And you can make your argument.
Yeah, when he took office, it went up.
Took office, it was on a trajectory to go up. So yes, now we've got almost 6 months, and it's flat.
Yeah, it's basically flat.
It's flat. So yeah. People lost six months of whatever growth, and I have too.
It rebounded back to so
it's
if you
back to where it started.
If you held on. You're basically made whole now.
Yeah.
And we'll see what happens from here.
Yeah, we'll see.
We'll see, you know, because like oil is down to $72 per barrel. And, you know, it was like $130.
I thought it was 150, but 130.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, it might have been higher.
I might be wrong.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Because, you know, Trump is drill baby drill. I saw the CEO of Exxon being interviewed. And what he is worried about is the DEI stuff that the European Union and the UK are putting on American companies that want to trade into the EU and into the UK. They are basically saying American companies have to abide by their domestic DEI.
That's going to that will tumble in short order.
I mean, come on.
That will tumble in short order.
You know.
Right. I don't know how exactly why, but I predict it. There's no chance that's going to
happen. Well, Trump he'll use the tariff lever.
That kind of nonsense.
That's nonsense.
Well, because here's why. Because that stuff is nonsense.
Yeah.
And it's not going to get in the way of the all-powerful dollar. It never will.
No.
Like at the end of the day, and that's what's happened with Trump. People are like, wait, this is killing us. You know, we need money.
It's like that London police chief who says, if I'm on Twitter or Meta, and I want to make some kind of comment about internal UK policies as an American from America. They want to control what I do in the same way they want to control what Exxon does here in America by saying, if you don't have these policies back home, you can't do business here. Yeah. That's crazy.
That can't last.
Yeah.
And I predict this. I don't even think it'll be a Trump. I'm not even sure it'll be a Trump policy. Or United States policy, rather. I shouldn't say Trump policy, but a U.S. policy that changes it. It'll come from within.
I agree.
Because the people will say, well, this is stupid.
Yeah.
We can get cheaper oil.
Right.
And we're not.
Yeah.
We're going to go, who are they going to go bargain with? Putin?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. They're going to choose his oil because is Putin DEI?
And that's just it's insanity. Yeah. And that's just one thing, right?
Yeah. Or Iran?
Dude. I mean, look at NATO. They're buying all kinds of American military gear because Trump is saying, you guys got to pick up your end of the stick. And so are they going to say, okay, I guess we're not going to buy jets because Boeing doesn't have a DEI?
No, of course not. Come on. Right. Necessity is going to – necessity will trump it.
You want to do some – that's a good one. So do you want to do some, fantastic stuff?
Let's do some good and bad.
And horrible stuff? You want to go first? Or
I will tell the good. I was at the All-American Ballpark last night. The Cincinnati Reds, the Red Stockings, as it turns out, the first American – or the first Major League ball team. I had a freaking blast.
Great.
You know, it's like there
with,
is
– With your
son. I went with my son. Just my youngest son who's about to head off to the Army.
Wow.
And we're trying to have some time together beforehand. But, you know, as I looked around, I sort of sat back.
Respect to that young man. Deep respect.
It wasn't packed. We had I spent a little extra money and got seats on the third baseline. And, you know, I just sat back like this for a while.
Oh.
Am I a huge baseball? No. I don't sit down and watch a ball game on Saturday on TV. But I love going to the ballpark.
Yeah.
And I think I like it because it's like it takes us to a place that's America.
Yes.
And it's undeniable.
You're touching the grass.
It's like you are, and I sat there and pondered, what about this sport like back in the golden era of the sport, you know, the 50s, 60s, and 70s to some extent, like what captivated us? And it's because that was the entertainment. You know, it's like those were our heroes. That's what it was.
Lou Gehrig, Sandy Koufax.
Yeah, all of them.
I mean,
you know, and
Pete Rose.
Pete Rose. And then I started to think about the teams that, or the cities that had crappy teams. They still filled the ballparks.
Yes, they did.
And there's something about going to the ballpark that's just, it's intoxicating. And yeah. I don't drink, so it's intoxicating in and of itself. But I it was...
Isn't it reassuring culturally?
It was culture. Maybe that's it.
Yeah.
And I had the same feeling, Norman. I even texted you. This is going back during COVID. I had the same feeling, and this is relevant to what you're about to do this weekend. I was at Mid-Ohio. There's a raceway in Mid-Ohio called Mid-Ohio Raceway.
Yeah.
And I sat up at the keyhole on this big mound where there's like, the keyhole is this hairpin turn that everybody has to go around. It's a great place to watch the race.
Great place.
And it, people bring out blankets and sit down. And it was in the midst of COVID when everything else was shut down and people were throwing bottles at each other in the streets. I mean, it was awful. And I sat there and I didn't even text you. I said, I feel like our country's okay.
Yeah.
Because there are people of all ilks,
yeah,
all colors, all whatever,
yeah,
here watching this race and not giving a flying rat's crap about anything else. And we were just watching the race. And that's how I felt last night. We were just watching the ball game. There was a family in front of me, a guy and his two, a young son and a young daughter and his wife. There was another guy behind me, caught a ball and right behind me.
That's awesome.
And, you know, he was going to give it to the kid. And he goes, I'm sorry, I can't. This is my first major league ball game. I would have given it to the kid, by the way. I would have given it to the kid. But it was just like, everybody was there, and I don't think everybody really cared about baseball.
No.
That's what's interesting about it.
Yeah.
It's just a place to go.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's turned commercial. It's very expensive to go buy food and do whatever. But, you know, go to the ballpark. Go to the ballpark.
Yeah.
And you'll be you'll get it. You'll ground yourself a little bit. And there was no fighting. There was no arguing. I'm sure it happens at times, but baseball's not like that. Like at the football games, you see these YouTube videos of people fighting each other, but nothing happened at baseball.
And hockey.
And hockey. Like, but at baseball, it's just people are watching a damn ball game.
Yeah, it's usually when a batter gets beaned and they think it's intentional, then you know, they empty the benches, but otherwise.
No, I mean in the stands.
Oh, okay.
With people, with people in the stands. Like there's not arguing going on like with guys behind you.
Yeah.
And Ellie De La Cruz, whoever for the Reds, man, that guy is something. Man, he's
a cool guy, man.
He is an athlete.
Yeah.
Like you can just see how the guy moves.
Yeah.
He's got skill sets. Yeah. Beyond.
He's such a beanpole too. It's right. Like, where's his muscle? It's right. It's like it's all bone.
And he is like, he just glides with speed and athleticism.
Yeah.
Really phenomenal. So that's my good.
That's fun, man. You want to do a bad or?
I don't think I have a bad.
So I'm just happy. My good and bad is under the name Brian Wilson. So there's a really evil Brian Wilson. Let's dispense with him first. He's the guy that shot that deputy sheriff up in Morrow County. By the way, the Morrow County sheriffs are the ones that kind of help do security at Mid-Ohio. And I'm sure he will be recognized at this weekend's professional racing up at Mid-Ohio, where I'm going to go race my car in the vintage portion of that event. At any rate, he pled innocent, unbelievably. But the state of Ohio, they want the death penalty on this guy. So that's very bad, Brian Wilson. The good Brian Wilson, of course, is the musician, passed away at age 82, one of the founding members of the Beach Boys. And I would just recommend, and I think it's maybe number one right now on Billboard in the wake of his demise this past week, the Pet Sounds album.
Oh, it's a masterpiece.
It's a masterpiece with things like... Wouldn't It Be Nice, Sloop John B., God Only Knows, and 27 other tracks when he remastered that, because it was mono in 1966 when it came out. Brian Wilson himself remastered it in 1997 and added some tracks. It's now a 27-track album, and it's in stereo. And it's a masterpiece.
It's orchestral.
Yes.
So for those who don't, it's funny you brought this up, because as I was driving home last night, trying to stay awake with my son in the car, he's into his heavy metal, whatever music it is. And I said, you know what? We're going to go on a little experiment here.
Anger music.
Pull up Pet Sounds.
Yeah.
Pull up Pet Sounds. And because he plays classical guitar. I mean, he's an incredible musician himself.
He's an incredible kid.
And I was like, this isn't just the song. This was an orchestra. And if you watch the YouTube videos of him recording some of this stuff, he is conducting an orchestra in the studio of precisely how he wants it. And look, and we got to talking about music these days and how, and I said, it just doesn't, it's not like that. I'm sure there's some of it, but back in those days, it really was a lot like the good guys were like that. The Beach Boys were like that. And I think I think legend has it that Paul McCartney and company heard that and thought, uh-oh, we better up our game. And that creates Sgt. Pepper.
Yeah.
So they say. I have no fact.
And they say Rubber Soul by the Beatles influenced Brian to make Pet Sounds.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? And these guys, like, they were going in with this, and he could see and feel and hear the music in his head before it comes out. And I'm not a musician that way.
He was a genius.
Like, I am technically, I can play classical guitar, and I can technically play, but I know what I'm not, and I'm not that.
Yeah.
And there's a few guys like that Eddie Van Halen was that way. They can just ooze music out of them.
Yeah.
And it just comes.
Yeah.
My classical guitar instructor was like that. They can just do it.
Yeah.
And there's lots of people. You know who else is like that? Lady Gaga.
Oh,
an incredible artist.
She's incredible.
An incredible artist.
Yeah, she is.
She's like that. And so all of you out there, I love it. Go listen to Pet Sounds.
Yeah.
And don't do it on Spotify, though, because we heard it on Spotify. Like, Matthew brought it up on Spotify, and I was like, this doesn't sound, you're not getting it.
Okay.
It's because it's dialed back. Go get the high test version. Put on your headphones.
Yeah.
And it's like the old wall of sound. You're just, it is.
Yeah, get the 1997 remix.
Yeah, get it.
That's the one to get because
get the high test, high MP, whatever version.
Well, and Brian, being the guy who did the remix, I mean,
he would know.
So it's official.
Yeah, he would know. So anyway, I'm with you. That's awesome. And maybe that's my sad that he's dead.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, it's good and bad. Yep. That's what I'm saying.
All right. So that is it, huh? We've got Common Sense Ohio, June 18th, 2025. Norm, go check him out running the hairpin.
Yeah, so I'll be driving an X. You know, it's a real vintage race car. It's not a reproduction. So like so many are like recreations. It's a car that many people know that of the famous driver Sam Posey, who later became an ESPN commentator, like at Indy and NASCAR. He was the original driver of this car that I now race.
That's awesome.
From 1973.
Yeah, hats off to Vintage Days up at Mid-Ohio. I can't be there. I wish I could, but I can't. But you can check it out, and you can check out this episode and lots more at commonsenseohioshow.com. If you've got a question, you got a comment, you want us to cover something, or you want to sit at the round table if you can hang with us, happy to have you. Otherwise, we are coming at you right from the middle each and every week. Till next week.